The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 31st of March, 2021. On the podcast today, Bobby Collaire, Chief Executive Officer of U Group, talks through their final results for 2020 and outlook for 2021, which saw contracted revenue increase by 16%. Also on the podcast, John Shaw, CEO of Itaconix, explains how they achieved a 156% revenue growth in their full year results for 2020. Plus, Christian Taylor Wilkinson, CEO of Altona Rare Earths, discusses the progress they're making on their rare earth projects and their move to the standard list. Plus, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most read RNSs. In fact, you can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see lots of content. There's an article there on i3 Energy. There's one there on Altona as well. Just bought a Christian, of course. There's one there on 88 Energy. And it really is rocketing at the moment, that share price. There's one there on Amrit. What else there? And of course, don't forget, our COVID-19 index. Biggest rise of the day is Symphony Environmental. That's up 12%, 12.3 to 18.25. Biggest fall of the day is Biotrol. It's down 5.2 to 5.8. Pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bobby Collaire, Chief Executive Officer of U Group. That's YU ticker. Bobby, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. And I've seen you just published your final results for the year, ended the 31st of December 2020. And so we're 3 months on for that. So it's historical, but it's been a fascinating year for everyone. And, it's been interesting to see how you've done. But before we get into that, Bobby, just a quick overview for people not familiar with U Group. Just explain what the company's about, please.
Sure. So U Group supply gas and electricity to the B2B sector in the UK. We listed in 2016. We've got approximately 18,000 meter points on supply, and that continues to grow.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, let's get into it. Top line then. So let's go through, if you could, some financial highlights from the year.
Yeah, okay. So revenues, we finished off at about 101 million. Booked an EBITDA loss of 1.7. Half one was 1.8, if you remember. Mm. So obviously half two has been profitable, which is good. Of the 1.7, 1.6 of it was directly COVID related. So unfortunate, but had it not been for COVID, I'd like to think we'd been in a much better position from an EBIT perspective. Good cash, 11.7 million in the bank, and overall, a good hold on customer receivables.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's amazing you've held up there, so well, considering all businesses shut down pretty much, and an unbelievable year. So let's look at the strategic operational highlights, if you could, Bobby. What have you achieved this year you're quite proud of there?
Yeah, it certainly has been a tough year, but I'm really, really pleased with the way the business has performed. We've got good revenue visibility for 2021. So at the end of 2020, we'd already contracted £93 million. Mm-hmm. That's about 16% higher than the previous year. We're accelerating, obviously, the organic growth, but we also have ambitions around the inorganic growth. Average monthly bookings doubled last year. On average, H1, H2 is 8.3, up from 4.2 in 2019. Our average contract term has grown. So in 19, it was 22 months. Last year, it was 24 months. And this year, we'll trend it to 28 months. So that's a positive thing. And general efficiency initiatives are underway to reduce the overheads and reduce the fixed costs, cost to serve, cost to acquire, so we can be more competitive and offer a better product offering to our customers.
Yeah, so look at that. I mean, if you look at the contracted revenue and the increases generally on bookings, It seems like you're going forward in a stronger position, even though COVID's happened.
Absolutely, and that's the strength, I believe, and the resilience that we of the business that's been repositioned. I think we've demonstrated momentum in H2 2020. You know, we continue that momentum in 2021. You know, Q1 2021 is trending profitably, which is great. I think it's a well-oiled machine, and I think I see no reason why we shouldn't just continue to keep scaling. Like I said, both organically and inorganically, the business is primed. It's ready. You know, we are at a position now where we're at the growth phase of our business, and that's exactly what we intend to do.
Yeah. And when you look back, like COVID, you know, nobody wants that. And when it happens, it's almost like, you know, your heart in your mouth kind of thing when business is shutting down, the economy shuts down. But then I suppose now we're at the other side of it, or coming out the other side of it. You must feel quite proud of how you've, you know, not only like to, you know, went through that and held up and strong resolve there, but now you're looking forward with a stronger order book and bigger sort of contracted revenue. You must be quite proud of that, mustn't you? How you've gone through, how you weathered that storm.
I'm going to point back to the strength and the resilience and the discipline of the business. You know, I've always maintained that this is a huge addressable market. There is huge opportunities for agile, entrepreneurial sort of challenger brands to come out there and really upset the apple cart, upset this archaic market. And that's exactly what we're doing. I think given the good set of results that we've reported and the good momentum going forward is an absolute testament to the strength of the business. And yeah, I'm incredibly proud and I'm incredibly confident about the future as well. So this momentum that we've generated, that we continue, you know, as we continue to keep doing that, and we will continue to keep reporting profitable growth.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, Bobby, three reasons then. If someone's listening right now and like the sound of the progress you're making here, but are not yet following the story, please give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add U Group to their watch list, please.
Well, I think it's a really exciting time for this stock. You know, we're absolutely at the growth phase of our stock. So, you know, that in itself is exciting. Me personally, you know, I'm not just the CEO. I'm the majority shareholder. So I've got additional skin in the game, which keeps me concentrated. Yeah. And generally, it's a good news story. I think it's a fantastic challenger brand story to follow. It's definitely one that your readers should follow.
Excellent stuff, Bobby. It's always good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Shaw, CEO of Itaconix. ITX is the ticker there. John, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. Great to be here.
Yeah, and you've just had your full year results out. Quite impressive figures there. Revenue up 156%. And we'll dig into that and we'll ask you how things are progressing. But before we do, John, as always, if someone's listening right now not familiar with Itaconix, could you just summarize what the business is about, please?
But Itaconix, we make and sell polymers from itaconic acid, which are bio-based raw material. We make these as key ingredients in disruptive consumer products that meet current and emerging customer needs in terms of changing buying behaviors that consumers have out there for performance, cost, and sustainability. So we deliver performance, we deliver cost, we deliver sustainability and human safety. And as plant-based ingredients for the low-carbon economy, we're very attractive, I think, for the emerging ESG funds and investors. So the examples of where we're incorporated right now is in areas of like dishwasher detergents, weightless hair styling, aluminum-free deodorants. We are in a wide range of consumer application areas where we are the key ingredient that delivers a performance, cost, or sustainability claim that's key to the success of our customers' products.
Understood. And you say you're active there in the dishwashing detergent market. And before we get into some of the figures there, tell us, you know, about that market and the developments in that market, if you could, in 2020.
It's been a big area of emphasis for us. It took about 6 years of development work to get to the great success that we had in 2020, where our success was driven by several major detergent brands, dishwashing detergent brands in North America launch products based on the unique functionality and value of our latest detergent polymer. What that polymer does is it allows excellent performance. It reduced the overall cost of the pods, of the detergent pods that we're in. And at the same time, they were very compact, so there was a lot of environmental benefits to having more compact products of it. So, and once you get out there with one successful formulation, more and more customers come to you, more and more brands come to you when they want a new product to come out on the market. So for us, 2020, after years of development, success bred more success and gave us tremendous advantages coming into 2021. But so just think about it. It's the little dishwasher detergent tablet that you put into your automatic, your home automatic dishwashing machine to clean your dishes in your kitchen.
Yeah, yeah, wow, it's yeah, big market. So let's move on to the sort of the hair side of it, the fixative polymer. It's sold through Nouryon, is that right?
Yeah, so each one of our ingredients gives some unique capability to the end product. And in this situation, there's a new style fad towards weightless hairstyling. Now, if you think about, I don't know about your mom, but my mom, you know, we had the big hairdos with the crusty hairspray on it. Well, they're moving away from that. And with our polymer, you get weightless hairstyling. So the hair still stays soft, but it has excellent curl retention, excellent frizz control, beautiful properties to it. So you can have a big head of hair and not have that crustiness to it. And what's great is if you want that kind of effect for a hairstyling product, you have to use our polymer. And in that, we work with Nouryon, which is the old Akzo Nobel Specialty Chemicals, to take it worldwide for us. They were number one in hairstyling polymers worldwide, and they chose to work with us to take our polymer worldwide. That's been very successful to us. But again, you can't get that effect in the hairstyling product without our polymer. And that's what we'd like to do, is to be the key ingredient for a determining claim on a customer's product.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so talk to me about the development of the Bio Asterix functional additives. What's the progress that you're making?
That's a whole new area for us that we announced last year. It's a broad new horizon for us to expand our chemistries out into much broader markets. The existing products that we have in detergents, hairstyling, and odor control, that's about a 600 million pound addressable market for us. Bio Asterix is going to significantly expand our addressable markets as we expand out into packaging, plastics, hygiene products, other areas of personal care, other opportunities in resins, paints, and coatings. So we started last year working with a company on a biodegradable packaging film. That's progressing. Overall, it's going to take a year to 2 years plus to get significant revenues in that area. But it's a huge new horizon of addressable market for us.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's dig into some of the figures here on the final results. You're able to increase group revenue, gross profit, and EBITDA. How do you manage that then? And, how's that going forward?
Well, it starts with the revenue growth of it and the broad base of applications. We're in, 100 plus products across a wide range of areas as sticky, sticky recurring revenues in all of those. And that's what it starts with, a strong base. And that's where that base just advanced and developed and will continue to develop with inertia for recurring revenues. And that gave us the 156% revenue growth to 3.3 million. We manage our costs well, so that all of that dropped through into maintaining gross profit margins. So that grew up to 1.1, 1.2 million in gross profits, 156% growth there. Then importantly, you need to make sure that gross profit drops through to your operating profit. Mm-hmm. So our adjusted EBITDA, it was about 2.5 million in 2019. We brought it below $1 million last year. That's a great achievement on our part, dropping it by $1.1 million in bringing the gross profits down through tight cost controls of it. And we further managed to bring that down into operating needs for the overall operations of only $1.2 million in terms of managing our working capital. So it's a combination of both the success that we had in the marketplace and our tight management of the company to make sure that that dropped through getting major advance towards profitability and managing our cash needs. And all of that combined with our fundraise from last year to end up the year in a strong working capital position with $1.4 million in cash.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier on, you know, you work with a lot of big brands. Are you able to tell us other global brands you work with?
Yeah, our customers get a little reluctant for us to be disclosing it. I think people out in the marketplace are pretty good at tracking down, finding us in a broad range of ingredients, but we are in a couple major detergent brands in Europe, in North America, on the personal care side and the hairstyling side of it, one of the global leaders, got the first product used there. So we broke into a global brand there through Nurion. Through Croda, we work with the largest number one supplier and brand in the North American carpet cleaning area. So we have some major brands throughout, but some of the best that we get is some of the small specialty brands. That's really where some of your growth comes from. So we're really balanced between both global brands, major brands, specialty brands, green brands, and private label.
I see. Yeah. And very important this day and age. I mean, you describe yourself, and position yourself as a sustainable company. Can you explain why you are sustainable, John?
We have a tremendous value to bring as plant-based ingredients for the low carbon economy. We do that by using carbon that comes from plants. So you think about there's a plant. In this case, our product, our raw material comes in from China. So there's corn that's grown that's capturing carbon dioxide. It's taking the carbon as a sugar. It's being used to ferment itaconic acid. The itaconic acid comes into our facility. We turn that into into our polymers that are then used as ingredients. So that plant-based carbon goes all the way through the process and ends up in a consumer product. Mm-hmm. When that consumer product gets disposed of, whether out into the wastewater treatment, into the wastewater's treatment, or into landfill, depending on what the nature of the product is, mm-hmm. That carbon is then held there until the product degrades and our product degrades. And we have it can vary, it does degrade, and then when it degrades, then the carbon returns back up into the atmosphere. So you're creating a decarbonation cycle there by locking in carbon as plant-based carbon, which is a high area of emphasis when you look at climate change is decarbonization in a low carbon economy. So we have tremendous value not only in our current products, but in some of the additional chemistries that we have in our pipeline to contribute to the low carbon economy.
Absolutely marvelous stuff. John, every day in the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets. To get on that list, of course, people have to hit that follow button and add you to their watch list. So people listening right now likes the sound of what you're doing and the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story. Could you just give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add Itaconics to their watch list, please?
Number one is we are a unique player in a great space. In terms of having key ingredients to disruptive end products. And it's very few companies are in that position to be in so many products as a key ingredient. Second of all, we are turning that potential into actual revenues, very sticky, recurring revenues with tremendous commercial momentum behind us. You can just see how it's growing from year to year, and and will continue. And then third is just the broader horizons we have for bringing additional products out into the low carbon economy out of our existing pipeline and contributing even more revenue potential through broader horizons coming forward. And those are, you know, I'm the second largest shareholder in the company. I've been committed to this for the last 12 years. I'm even more excited about the next 5 to 10 years for the company and the potential that we have, because we're actually delivering on it.
Yeah, excellent stuff. John, it's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Super, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Christian Taylor-Wilkinson, CEO of Altona Rare Earths. That's ANR ticker. Christian, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and you've just released your interim results, and there's lots of progress happening there. Before we get into that, could you just, for people not familiar with the company, Christian, just summarise what it's about, please?
Yes, of course. So Altona has been listed on the stock markets for about 15 years, but it was on AIM primarily, and started 2020. We took the company from AIM to Aquis, and we spent the last couple of years looking for an appropriate strategy for the company. We totally reshuffled the board, so we have six board members now, and the mining sector we decided to venture into is the rare earth strategy, which we can discuss the reasons for it a little bit later. And to date, we started investing in three different projects in three different African countries, all within the rare earths space.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, of course, rare earths, very hot space. So take us through some of those. I mean, you've got a new agreement with the Monte Muambe Rare Earths Project in Mozambique. Give us some highlights of that, if you could.
Yeah, of course. So this is a pretty special project, and we're very excited to have it. It's the third project we actually entered into negotiations to acquire, and it seems to be in the fastest to happen. So we announced a memorandum of understanding last week, which gives us 90 days to conduct a legal due diligence process, which I think is fairly typical when you're looking to acquire a majority stake in a mining company. Mm-hmm. So we've got our lawyers, various personnel on the ground in Mozambique now doing that work for us. In the meantime, we're going to undertake a small exploration drilling program. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess the key thing of this, what sets this project apart from the other two projects that we're also in due diligence with, this project has been explored fairly extensively in the past by it's actually an ASX company called Globe Metals. Globe were looking for fluorite, which they found in reasonable quantities, I think, but probably not economic quantities. But the byproducts of their exploration in the core samples that they did, they found sort of significant traces of rare earths. So this is obviously what we're into. This is one of our reasons why our geologist has had it on his watch list for quite some time, and we were happy to pounce on it when we found it available to acquire. So there's some sort of quite chunky grades on some of the intercepts. And what the plan obviously will be to is to re-explore these areas and then expand the exploration program over the next 2 or 3 years whilst our stake in this company increases. So I think that's, you know, in a nutshell, that's the project. It's fantastic, you know. We're lucky to get our foot in the door, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's Mozambique. So let's go over to Uganda there. You've got an option agreement to acquire a majority interest in the Nankoma Rare Earth Project. Take us through that.
Okay, so this is different. Where Muambe is a carbonatite structure, which is basically the rare earth sit within rock, within the mountainside. It's actually a volcanic crater, but, you know, in the bedrock. So that would mean that the quantities would be higher because they're more concentrated in the rock. But over millennia, the rock starts to weather, starts to crumble, and it means from a mining point of view to access the crumbled, weathered rock, which has turned to probably clay or soil by now, it's a quicker and cheaper process to access the rare earths. But the metals themselves were probably less densely populated. So this sort of you know, swings and roundabouts for the projects. But what Altona wanted was projects, assets in different soil geology structures. So we're going to be acquiring those in rock, which will take longer and cost more, but will give an ultimately larger supply. And then something like Nankoma in Uganda, that's an ionic clay soil deposit-based asset. And it's also a greenfield site, so no one's actually done any work on this project. And the mm-hmm. rationale for buying it, which we announced in the market last year, was it sits just south, so our northern border of our tenement abuts the southern border of another ASX-listed company's project, which is, they've been pushing out exploration data for the last 6 months, and I think they've got over 300 million tons of capacity there. So this initially is very promising, but obviously time will tell whether or not this turns out to be as rich as our neighbor's project. But I think even if it doesn't, even if it's a fraction of that, it will be, for a company the size of Altona, an economic project for us. So we're quite excited, but it's going to take sort of 6 to 12 months before we can get some exploration data into the bank, and then we'll be able to speak to shareholders about what we have there.
Yeah, absolutely. And on a corporate level, you're sort of fully funded to move to LSE, is that right?
Yeah, so we haven't yet applied to list on the LSE, and I'd like to make that clear. We're in the process of submitting our prospectus, and it is a process you have to go through, which takes a number of months. So we're right at the start of this process, but we're just getting our ducks in a row, so to speak. And I think where we may be hopefully slightly quicker than some companies going through this process, a number of our board members have been through IPOs themselves, or have worked with companies going through IPOs. So we know the process, we know what's required of us. Mm. And we're working with a great legal team as well. So that's in place. But interestingly, Aquis has come up trumps for us, and we've raised just over £800,000 in the last 4 months by being listed on Aquis. And I think one of the sort of well-known downsides, I don't want to be rude to Aquis, is that it's quite hard to raise money on it, because a number of investors think there's no liquidity. So we've sort of proven that incorrect. So we've raised over £800,000, which gives us working capital now for about 12 months. Yeah, we're hoping to list on the LSE Standard Market within maybe 3 months. And the reason for that list is ultimately we are going to be requiring, you know, many millions of pounds, 5, 10, 20, who knows how many millions of pounds over the next 5 or 6 years to get these assets into, if not production, then certainly to a bankable feasibility study. So it's a long, hard slog, which is going to be capital intensive. And I don't think Aquis possibly could provide that level of funding where it is right now. So we have to go back to the good old London Stock Exchange for that process. But yeah, we're comfortable. We have cash in the bank. And we're moving forward on all fronts. Yeah, excellent.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Christian. Well, on the podcast every day, I highlight the top 5 most followed companies. Obviously, to get on that list, people have to hit that follow button. So to encourage people to do that right now, give them 3 reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page there, and add Altona Rare Earths to their watch list, please.
Okay. I think that we're in the rare earth sector. It's a buzzing sector. The reality is, the world needs rare earths. Almost every single piece of technology these days, and I'm talking from, you know, the green side of wind turbines to electric vehicles, requires large quantities, kilos of rare earths. But mobile phones, every day, sort of electronic devices, that also requires it. And you can't make them without it. So just alone, if you're in this sector and you have a chance of getting to actually mine rare earths, it's a great play. And Altona is really early stage. I'm allowed to say it, consider as, you know, cheap compared to our competitors. Yes, they do have projects underway. We don't, but we still, you know, if you want to take a punt, we're a great cheap stock. I think, secondly, we're trying to de-risk the investment itself. We're not just focusing on one asset, which could, you know, come up with the usual delays of any mining company, whether there's nothing in the ground, or you're digging in the wrong place, or the government where your asset is decides to have a revolution or something like that. We're de-risking it by acquiring assets in different countries and in different geological structures, some quick, some expensive, some slow. I think that's another good thing as well. And I just think that our board is a great blend of mining expertise, African residents, people with, you know, PLC experience, who have run and advised listed companies for, you know, for 20, 30 years. So I think any issue that might be thrown our way, we will deal with it in the correct way, putting shareholders, shareholder value of our company priority.
Excellent stuff. Christian, good to chat to you. Hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin. Have a lovely day. Bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, Mode Global Holdings, up 2.86% to 54 pence. At four, Tizian Life Sciences, down 5.14% to 101.5. At three, Echo Energy. Energy. And that's up 8.15% to 0.995. At two, Supply Acme Capital, down 1.18% to 0.585. And at one, it's 88 Energy, up 30% to 3.65. And do you know what? It's gone gangbusters last few days. I'm just looking at the chart here, and it's gone from 0.5 pence. Let's have a quick look here. 0.5 pence. When was that? Literally, 12th of March. It's 0.47 pence, okay? Now, 3.7 pence. So what's that? Six and a half times? Oof! Oh! See, that? So you can get that, suppose. And the small cap market. That's why I like the small cap market. Okay, top five most read RNSs are as follows. At five, Premier African Minerals, initiation of definitive feasibility study at Zulu. At four, Open Orphan Holdings and Company. At three, Deep Verge, updates on Lab Skin, Modern Water, Skin Trust Club. At two, 88 Energy, operations update. And at one, Omega Diagnostics, that's director shareholding, person discharging management responsibility, shareholder vote rights. Check that out. All those there at foxmarkets.co.uk. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.